Once again, my name is Khaya Magaxa. I am the chair of this portfolio committee. We've got members of this portfolio committee. Before we introduce ourselves, we would like to welcome Dinel, the chair of the board, CEO. Okay. The CEO, you officially welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and the honorable members. I would wish one to introduce himself or herself quickly before we start, so that at least they can be in a position to know our names, so that they can refer to us directly if there is any direct answer or question that need to be answered. As I already alluded, my name is Khaya Magaxa, the chair of this portfolio committee.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Pardon my voice. I think Western Cape weather. I'm still getting used to it. I'm member Chabulile Mamkwanas. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dora Dlamini, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Goedemorgen. Good morning. Here is Marie, member of the committee.
Goedemorgen. My name is Judith Tabalala.
That's very good. Good morning, Steve Swart. Chair, just my apologies. At 10 o'clock, I'm going to a WIPS meeting. So please, no disrespect. I'll try to get back as soon as possible. Thank you.
My name is Mwiseni Ndlozi.
My name is Nawemzi Kwangwa. Chair, same apologies, Honorable Steve Swart, but we'll come back to the meeting.
Thank you. Your apologies are noted. Welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister. Can you find a seat in front here? Honorable Kumede.
I'm Sibusiso Kumede, a member of the committee. Morning.
That's the committee members. Can we quickly get the same?
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Montla Sasa. I'm the chairperson of DINEL.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Donnie Detoy, and I'm the group CEO for DINEL.
Good morning. My name is Tali Sedek. I'm a member of the board and chair of the audit committee.
Good morning. My name is Sugisi Otula. I'm a member of the board.
Good morning, Chair and members of the portfolio committee. My name is Mandla Mnisi. I'm an non-executive director at DINEL.
Good morning, Chair and members of parliament. My name is Tami Magazi. I'm a member of the board and chair of the HR committee.
Good morning, Chair and members of parliament. My name is William Tlakwani. I'm the group chief operating officer of DINEL.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Harvey van Zyl. I'm the interim chief financial officer. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Khatazo Tlakwedi. I'm the acting director general.
Lebohang Dekane, Public Enterprises.
Andile Mosha, Public Enterprises.
Chair, I'm Avril Helsted. I'm the acting chief specialist responsible for transport and defense enterprises.
Good morning, Chair. Pumulo Masala, Deputy Minister, Public Enterprise.
Thank you so much, members, honorable members, and DINEL, including the department. I would just to check if the department is comfortable with the way they are sitting. I've forgotten them because I could not identify. At least now, it would be nicer if the two join the three. least if I have to refer to them, at least they are in one corner. I'm sorry to interfere with that. Yes, honourable members, I think we all have the agenda. I've already welcomed everybody and we've already received the apologies. Now we'll have to give to the Dinelle to assist us with the input. However, I need to appreciate what we have seen in our oversight trip last week as the portfolio committee were embarked on a oversight visit to certain entities including Dinelle, and all we know about most of these entities, in fact, and all we knew before we went or we embarked on this oversight was just all the negativity, everything that is to do with the Transnet, to do with Dinelle, to do with SAA, is just state capture and all its impact. But I must say our oversight, because our intention was not necessarily to dig deep on those problems, was actually to go and orientate ourselves so that we can be in a position to understand the nature of the operations and the work that is being done. What is Dinelle? What is SAA? You know, just to get to understand what involves there. Therefore, we happen to get an experience of a bit totally different picture, I must say, insofar as operation and the nature of the instructions, because at least though there is still a dominant factor of negativity, but at least our oversight visit provided us with the opportunity to see beyond that negative or that dark picture. We were in a position to be exposed to the good work that the Dinelle people are involved in, and we think we know better now, though we are still having a lot of questions that need to be answered insofar as the governments and the poor financial situations there. Therefore, we would like you to take us through. Also take into cognizance that there were questions that, due to time constraint, we said we are not necessarily going to be expecting you to come with all then in the meeting or in the session we had. In this session, all those questions that were left unattended will be actually be involved in your presentation. Therefore, we expect more than the briefing you gave us. Your briefing of this session must also be informed by those questions. Therefore, we'd like to give you an opportunity. We also appreciate the presence of the department, DG and DG. Thank you for coming and your crew. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Deputy Minister, to also being part of this session. Without wasting our time, let's just go through that process and hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you, Deputy Minister, for joining us today. It's a great opportunity, I think, for us as Dinelle to come and just give you a sense of the context of turning around Dinelle. And thank you, Chair, again, for the visit you made to Dinelle, because at least it would explain to the parliamentarians why we still think that Dinelle is one of the greatest opportunities for South Africa to not only participate in the fourth industrial revolution in terms of technologies and to deepen that for the country,
but it is also a good opportunity to add value to the balance of payments of the country, in the sense that DINEL still very much has the capacity to export to various markets in the world. But Chair, through you, it's a bit of a sad day for us coming into Parliament and knowing that we are going to talk about a company that seems to be having some of the cutting-edge technologies in defense in a country where our children, in terms of crime and murder, the violence that goes around, and the contradiction for us as a team. Last night we were talking to each other saying, here we are with technologies that globally they have satellites that can survey in war and do all sorts of things. How do you relate that to our country where we seem to not be able to protect one another? And I just thought I would leave that to the parliamentarians to say, for us it's a very sad morning, but it has brought to our minds, if we say that DINEL is indeed such a great opportunity for the country, how do we, as we have we turn it around, or in its best performance, make sure that we can leverage some of its know-how for the improvement of the lives of South Africans as well beyond just defense? The presentation, Chair, that we have in front of you, that pretty much on the turnaround strategy first, so that we go through the in-depth of what the plans are. And I just want to remind the parliamentarians that we pretty much feel like we've been in DINEL forever. We were appointed 2 years ago on April 8th, this is the second financial year for us. Even if it sounds like a very short time, it's been a very deep, intense, focused approach by the whole board to ensure that we can be able to give you the presentation today on our turnaround. And I'm sure the parliamentarians have already heard that the Treasury has approved a recap of 1.8 billion DINEL, which you will see will make a big dent in improving our fortunes going forward. I'm going to hand over to the Group CEO to start the presentation, and I think the presentation will then flow into the governance side, which is towards the end. But we felt we should start that way so that you can get to the crux of the outcome of the 18 months, 2 years that we have had, and why these key areas of performance are critical. May I hand over to you, Danny, to start?
Thank you, Chair. Chair of the Committee, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues, thanks for the opportunity to provide you with an update on the turnaround strategy at DINEL, and then with a specific focus on governance and also our development objectives. So I joined DINEL on the 14th of January, so almost 8 months now, and I must sort of echo the Chair's words. It feels a bit longer, but not because we're tired, because it's so intense and we've achieved really a lot in the organization. I appreciate the opportunity to give you an update. I'm going to start with briefly what DINEL is about, DINEL at a glance. So as you know, we are fully owned by the South African government. So our shareholders is the Department of Public Enterprise. We report then to the Minister of Public Enterprises. The company was established in 1992, and it was formed sort of from the Arms Corps environment. So there was a separation agreement agreed with Arms Corps to take this defense capability, IPR, and create a unique entity to develop defense capabilities for the country. So that's where it all started. Some of our facilities exist more than 50 years. So the PMP facility that some of you visited last week, remember we said it started in 1934, so it goes back many, many years. And first production was conducted there in 1938. So many of our institutions go back several years. Today we have a staff complement, a headcount of around 3,587 employees. I will talk a bit more details later on, but we have reduced our headcount over the last 14 months with around 950 people. So we came down from around 4,500, so a significant reduction in employees. Today we still have a very competent and capable engineering and technical capabilities base and capacity. So we have around 620 engineers today involved in development activities, and the average experience in that group is around 15 years. We have people with up to 30, 35 years, and around 5% of those colleagues will come up for retirement in the next 5 years. But also we have a group of energetic, vibrant young talents as well. So quite a good balance in terms of our engineering capabilities. On top of that core engineering team, chair and members, we have technicians and operators that work in our manufacturing operations and support operations of 1,740 people. So still we have a very competent and experienced team to expedite our programs and projects. Our annual turnover, typically around 3.7, 3.8 billion. We have the same target for this year. Our exports was around 46% chair, but typically in our business plan, we're looking more and more at the international market and exports, and we see a potential ratio of around 70% exports and 30% in the local market. This, of course, is a consequence of the declining local defense spending and pressure on the defense budget. We have 12 plants, 12 facilities throughout the country. So briefly on the structure, I'm not going to go into all the details. We also presented a slide last week at PMP. But as I mentioned, we report to the Department of Public Enterprise. But also we have quite a complex and comprehensive stakeholder environment that we have to manage, because we also have a responsibility towards the Department of Defense. We also have a key supplier to the South African Police Services, etc. So it's important that we collaborate. Of course, in terms of our international business, we have a lot of interaction with DERCO, Department of Trade and Industry, institutions like CSIR, universities, etc. So quite a lot of stakeholders and complex environment to coordinate and to manage. In terms of the internal structure of the organization, Chair, some of our main business is the Nel Dynamics, one of our key divisions. Here we have around 700 people, and in that we have the missile capability, which is classified as sovereign according to the defense policies. So that's a very important and key sovereign capability for the country. So the Defense Review of 2015 classified this capability as sovereign. So it's something we have to protect, we have to invest in, we have to keep on developing. In that we also have Space Tech here in the Cape, and also the capability of at the UAVs, so unmanned aerial vehicles, which is also an important focus area. In terms of the Nel Land Systems, Chair, and this is also a facility that you visited, the Nel Land Systems, here we have our capability to produce large artillery systems, vehicles. For example, the Badger vehicle that you saw for Hoefeister is in this facility. And then also LMT is one of our smaller operations in the vehicle domain. The Nel Vehicle Systems produce armored vehicles, 4x4, 6x6, 8x8. And it's also a very historical business in the South African context, responsible for our main battle tank manufacturing, etc. Then, Chair, the Nel Aeronautics, two key parts here is the aerostructures capability that predominantly produce aerostructure parts for large aircraft, for example, Airbus, A400M program, etc. And then also in here is a very crucial capability for the South African Air Force. In this business, Chair and members, we are the original equipment manufacturer for the Oryx helicopter, the Royfalk helicopter, and the C-130 transport aircraft. And we are responsible to maintain those aircraft and to make sure that they are serviceable to support our defense operations, peacekeeping operations in the DRC, and also when we have emergencies, for example, the flooding in Mozambique and so on. We are the people that keep those aircraft in the air and make sure they are available and serviceable. On the right-hand side, Chair, the Nel PMP that you also visited is our small caliber ammunition manufacturing capability. Around 800 people work in this part of the business. And then below that we have the Nel Overberg Test Range, which is close to Arniston, not far from here. And here, Chair and members, we have a very advanced test facility where we test missiles that are launched from either naval platforms or from aircraft, etc. And this is well utilized by our international customers as well. Then on top of the core divisions, Chair, we have a number of associated companies. So here we have equity in Hensel Optronics. We have 30% in that business, partnering with a German company called called Hensel, obviously. And here we produce advanced optronics, so periscopes for submarines, all sorts of night vision equipment, command sites and sighting systems for our main battle tanks, etc. In that part of the business. Then we have a JV with Rheinmetall Danel Munitions. Here we have 49% of the equity. The controlling share is with Rheinmetall. The value of that part for us, Chair, is around 1.5 billion. And in last year, they delivered around 250 million in profits that contribute to our income statement and profitability. And then lastly, we have a JV in the UAE called Barish Dynamics. Here we also have 49%. And also this business is growing and doing well. They specialize in precision-guided munitions. So it's essentially a munition that is guided and flown to the target, so quite advanced technology. And this business in last year contributed a dividend of around 50 million to the business chain. So in general, about the business, the context, the scope, I think that's a good summary in this slide. So... Chair and members, on the mandate of Danel, so our primary mandate according to the Defence Review of 2015 is to support and maintain the Department of Defence sovereign strategic industrial defence capability in an efficient and sustainable manner. So as I already briefly alluded to, all our divisions are classified in terms of the Defence Review, the missile business specifically as a sovereign capability. And our artillery part, aircraft parts of the business, etc., is classified as a strategic capability. So what it means in simple terms is that we have to maintain that capability. We have to invest, we have to grow capacity and capability and employ people and make sure that we grow the employment and we grow the capability and that we stay current in terms of the technology maturity and to be able to service and support our local customers, the Department of Defense. Chair, we have to contribute to industrial development towards the building of a dynamic aerospace and defense-related industrial cluster, long-term growth strategy aimed at increasing sales product portfolio and service offering, and this is a key driver, of course, for our export consideration. Pursue financial recovery and stability based on achieving profitability targets is a key element of what we intend to do and what we're doing. Ensure on-time and cost delivery on major programs is an important focus area, especially now that the business has been recapitalized. Our focus now is on getting our activity ratio in the factories increased. We had some activity, of course, in the first quarter. We had sales of around 250 million, but that is around 25-30% of where we can be. And we need to use the funding now to increase the activity, make sure that our factories deliver and perform. So enormous focus on cost delivery, delivery precision, and keeping to our schedules and commitments to our customers. We need to contribute to socio-economic objectives, including skills development and transformation. I come back to some of those details and data. And then we need to be compliant with local and international legislation, policies, regulations, treaties, and code of good governance where Danel conducts business. So in this context, Chair, if you allow me and members of the committee, what is very important for us is we produce, as you know, defense equipment. Now, defense equipment is very well regulated in terms of the legislation, treaties, etc. So South Africa signed up to the Wassenaar Agreement, for example, as many other European and African countries have done. But exports of our products is controlled by a committee called the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, in short, the NCACC. And Minister Jackson Ntambo is the chairperson of that committee. And the committee consists of representatives of the various ministries, for example, DDI, Department of Science, DPE, Department of Defense. DIRCO is on that committee. And what we do as business people, we identify opportunities in countries, then we present those opportunities to that committee. They must give us a marketing permit and ultimately an export permit for the product before we are allowed to export that. So one of the challenges we have today is that there's a change to the so-called EUC, Chair. The EUC is the end user certificate
apologize for the detail, but this is quite important. So around 2013, a change came about where there was a decision to put on the EUC that we as a country have the right to do an inspection of those products once it's delivered to the customer country. So this has always been in the law and always been a requirement, but it was never so prominent in the end user certificate. And now some of our customers are objecting to that. They say it's too prominent. You know, they respect, but they don't want us to infringe their sovereignty, come to their military bases and so on. It's a very sensitive topic. So we are in discussions with the NCACC to see how we can manage that. And I mean, ultimately, it's an international trade. It's a governance decision. It's a political decision. And we respect that. But this can potentially have quite significant impact on our business in terms of our specific target market. So I just want to mention that in terms of the other background. Then, Chair, I'm going to go into the historical financial performance, the numbers. So you can see here the historical sales or revenue in the business going back to 2014. So we had a good growth 2014, 2015 in terms of the volume in the business. And in the previous year, not the last financial year, we're still finalizing our audit on last year's numbers. We did around 5 billion. But in 2019, indicative, we're around 3.8. And we have a similar budget for this year, for 2020, to be at the level of around 3.8 billion in revenue. Here you can see also on the right-hand side the profitability situation. So quite profitable over the last years, and good growth. But in 2018 we made quite a significant loss, around 1.8 billion. And below you can see the reasons for that. I remember one of the questions we received at PMP is what caused the demise and the decline in the business. So the short answer, it's a combination of state capture, mismanagement, not following our governance procedures and so on, and not having an effective organization in terms of delivery of our products. So all of those things contributed. And ultimately, at some point, the organization became paralyzed, and we could not... Our factories were not running at full capacity, etc., and we simply could not deliver. And then when you have such a significant reduction in volume, in revenue, of course, it's very difficult to cover your fixed costs, cover your recoveries. We have excess capacity or had excess capacity in some of the factories and so on. So this is the main things that that contributed to that situation. Chair, I also just want to mention that the some of these years in terms of revenue are probably overstated, and this is part of our audit process now. I will come to the audit status with the Auditor General of South Africa, but essentially we went back 5 years and we look at all the previous years in terms of what the revenue was, what could be really recognized and so on. And one of the key challenges we have in terms of audit is the so-called revenue recognition, where we have changed now to IFRS 15, which is a new international standard that essentially prescribes how and when one can recognize income in terms of progress you've made on development programs and so on. So some of those years will actually reduce in terms of the revenue. The next slide, Chair, honorable members, is the performance in terms of cash equivalents and borrowings. So here you can see that our borrowings increased, and if you look at the red line, and the cash equivalents declined. So that's of course not a sustainable situation. Fortunately, the recapitalization that we received on Saturday last week will make a significant difference in terms of this. Our balance sheet will look a lot different after that. And you can also see on the right-hand side, ultimately our solvency is impacted as a consequence of the cash crisis. And essentially our equity reduced significantly because of the liabilities are growing and the assets are not. So that's the situation that we're facing historically. Then on the turnaround plan, so if you look at this table, Chair Member, on the left-hand side, you can see the status on in December 2018. So what I did with my management team when I came on in January, I made a status report of what is the status of the business and what do we have to focus, what do we have to improve. And on the right-hand side, at the end of July, sort of after my first 6 months, I made a status update of that. And I'm pleased to report that with the support from the board and our shareholders and the management team, we have made progress on many fronts. And I'm quite happy with that that progress, Chair. So firstly, we had a situation where we had poor governance practices and financial management. Today we have made huge improvements on governance, and I have a special slide to come back to highlight and illuminate what we have done, especially supported by the audit committee in terms of that context. But we've made improvements on our systems, on our capabilities, in terms of policies, procedures, all of those aspects, we have made significant improvements. Chair, we had poor program execution at the time. Today we have appointed the Chief Operating Officer, William, that introduced himself on the 1st of July. He joined us and he will come. He came with a lot of experience in terms of operations, engineering projects, complex advanced program management. And with the support from William and our divisional CEOs, we are starting to turn around in terms of improving performance in the business. So in some sense, in the past, there was a general excuse in the business that we have no money, so we are paralyzed, we cannot progress. That excuse has been removed now. Now the focus is on execution, on delivery, on restarting the operations. So this is what we do. We had an eroding capability base and declining technology access, Chair, in the end of last year. But the organization has been stabilized. We see it now in the reduction of the number of people that leave the organization. And as I already mentioned, we have quite a significant capability in terms of technical skills remaining in the organization. The morale is also quite better after the recapitalization announcement, Chair. So this all contributes to create a stable work environment that we desperately need to take the organization into the future. We had limited market access and declining order book, but today we have improved order intake, and we will soon have the largest export contract in the history of the organization. And I will speak a little bit more about that on the slides to come. Unsustainable cost base is a problem for us, Chair, but I think we are one of the SOEs that took this serious. Over the last 14 months, we have reduced our operating cost by around 500 million. 327 million of that is related to employment cost, and the rest is reductions in general operating costs, travel costs, etc., etc. We had severely constrained liquidity situation, which is now fortunately improved. We had a high debt exposure, but now that's also improving, Chair. We had an unfocused and fragmented operational structure. We have fixed that now. We have appointed the key people on the executive team. Yesterday we also got approval from Department of Public Enterprise to appoint a permanent group chief financial officer, which will also send a positive message to the market and create stability in the financial domain. We had demoralized employees. Now the morale is improving. We had angry suppliers and customers, and we have actions now to improve the relationship with our suppliers and customers. But, Chair, in my first month, I visited all our key customers in our key markets, and what I can tell you is there's a huge appreciation for Danel, for its people, for its world-class technology. The market wants our products. There's enormous respect for what we have. And I will come to it again, but today we have more than 40 expressions of interest from local and international organizations that either want to partner with us or to make some outright acquisition of parts of the business. So obviously what is important in that context is we have something of value that the world and our target market wants. We had some misalignment in terms of the stakeholder environment between DoD, DPE and National Treasury. But yeah, we've done a lot also to improve that in terms of active and intensive stakeholder engagements. I've made many presentations to the Military Command Council, to the SecDef, to the Ministry, to trying to get all these stakeholders to collaborate and to understand at least what our intentions are and what we're trying to do with Danel. So today we have significant support from those stakeholders. So the turnaround plan, the fundamentals of it, Chair, and I will not go into the detail, but at a very high level, we want to maximize the business value of our core business areas. We want to deliver on our strategic partnerships. We want to exit non-core businesses. We want to improve the governance, and we have already done a lot. It's about driving down cost. As I mentioned, we've taken out 500 million. We can do more. We want to optimize our property portfolio, Chair. Today, we utilize at best around 50% of our facilities effectively. So there's an opportunity to look at restructuring, maybe divesting, or to sublease to some other interested parties in this context. We want to secure funding, and we've achieved some form of success on that to date. It's about ensuring the skills and capability management, also in terms of our strategic mandate. It's to improve order intake, and we want to restore the Danel brand in employee morale and loyalty. It's quite important. So, Chair, on the next two slides, essentially a summary of what has been achieved in the last months. So, firstly, in the first quarter of the current financial year, we have taken in orders of close to 2 billion. So it's quite a significant achievement if we compare with any other previous year. And I think the important key conclusion here is that there's no lack or absence of business. We have sufficient business in Danel to take the organization forward. What is in the 2 billion? There's one order of 1.34 billion, which is an international order for an export customer, obviously, for integration of some missiles onto naval vessels. And it's a classified project and country, so I can't say much more about it. The rest is solid support here from our local customers. So it's Air Force, Land Systems, Ammunition. We received some small orders from the police services. We're expecting a new order around 70 million for 9mm and 5.56 ammunition for PMP. We have a winnable order pipeline of around 30 billion in the 24 months. So this is the opportunities that we believe we can win, Chair. The total pipeline is around 50 billion, and we are well positioned with our products to achieve that. And this will give us a solid base to secure our corporate plan. If you look at the order backlog, we have an order backlog of around 18, maybe close to 19 now. And if you just do a linear distribution over time, this will give us more or less 4 years of sales. So as I said, the key conclusion, we have sufficient work. The largest export contract ever is imminent. And as I said, I cannot say much about it, but it's in the order of, on top of the 1.3 billion, there's another 5.5 billion advance payments of 1.5 for development, another 600 million for manufacturing. After 4 years, it will give us a lot of hours for development, as you can see. And yeah, as I mentioned, the Danel brand is well respected, and our products are wanted in the market. So we are well positioned in that context. We have solid support from our local customer. We continue to take orders from the local customer. We are exiting onerous contracts, Chair, which will give us sort of improved results of around 250 million on profitability, which is a recurring cost if we don't act. We have mitigated the parent company guarantee of 101 million euros, so around 1.6 billion rand. Operating costs I spoke about, we've reduced our office headcount by around 24 people, and we have saved 15 million in the process. So we have really agile and lean management team now. I already spoke about the engineering base, so I'm going to go through that again. I spoke about the technicians. We have potential to generate cash flow from non-core assets, Chair, of around 1.6 billion. And the first actions here are in the 3 to 6 months window. We intend to conclude the first one in December of this year. On top of that, we can generate around 2 billion from SEPs, strategic equity partnership activities. So in terms of operating costs, Chair, we believe we can reduce further by around 500 million, predominantly in the supply chain environment. We have an ongoing project with PwC where they support us on identifying areas of optimization where we consolidate our procurement and significant potential to reduce cost here. I already mentioned the expressions of interest in the business. I spoke about Hoefijzer. Hoefijzer is a very important one for us. About half our current order backlog, so around 9 billion of the 18, is related to Hoefijzer. So this is a very important program that we have to restart and get a new agreement with the customer, the DoD, on how we conclude that. In the meantime, we continue to develop There are 9 different vehicle configurations. The first one, section variant, is around 96% completed. We have around 40 requirements to close on that. And, of course, we have good people and motivated and capable management team. So a lot of new people that came into the organization, and we are here because we want to make a difference and we want to improve the organization, Chair. So on funding, I'm not going into all the details again, but our balance sheet is over-indebted, 3.4 billion, mostly short-term funding. Of course, the recap situation, Chair, has improved our situation. And on the 3.4 billion, maybe I can just give some background for the benefit of the members. We have a number of government guarantees. We have one guarantee for 3.4 billion. That guarantee is for 5 years, and there are 4 years remaining of that guarantee. What we do with that guarantee, we take it to the institutional investors, like PIC, Bhuvanani, typical pension fund investors. They buy the government bonds, or they take up government bonds, and obviously provide us in for the capital to manage the business. Most of those bonds are maturing now in September. The first one is on the 11th, and we have to extend it. So we've gone around these investors. We did a roadshow. We made more or less the same presentation to them. We got a positive response from those investors to renew those bonds for some period. But it's very important that we are successful in that context, because we need that funding. On top of that, Chair, we have another government guarantee of 1 billion, which we used in the last months to take to what we call our lenders group. So we have 3 banks, RMB, Absa Netbank, and they provide us with bridging finance to fund projects, and also in the last months to help us to pay core salaries. And of that 1 billion, we have utilized 430 million that we have to pay back, obviously, now that we are recapitalized. So that's what we have in terms of government guarantees and government support. I'm just looking at the rest. In terms of recapitalization, our request, I think more than a year ago, was for 2.8 billion. We have received the 1.8 now, but it's quite essential and crucial that we get the other 1 billion as well. I think we need to emphasize that point. The 1.8 will help us a lot to start operations, to proceed and progress the other business, but it's ultimately important that we also get the 1 billion in the next financial period. Our planning was to get the recap by 30 September, so it's great that we got it 1 month earlier, and I appreciate the support on all fronts on that. Our customers are now insisting that we ring-fence advance payments, so they want us, when they make an advance payment, we must ring fence it and ensure that we only use it for their specific projects and not to pay general expenses and so on. I remember at PMP, Chair, there was a question about the SARS issue. So let me illuminate that and talk a bit about it. What happened is the lenders group only gave us funding for core salaries, for base salaries. So they were not prepared to give us the funding for UIF, for skills development and pay as you earn. They said, mischievous maybe, we should fix it in government, which is of course not possible. So since April, we haven't paid those, let's call it SARS statutory monies. But when we got received the recap now, we have made full payment. So the SARS issue is taken care of. So all divisions, the corporate office, all subsidiaries have paid the SARS fees on the weekend. We have processed that. So we have valid tax clearance certificates now, except for the one business, which is LMT, which is a separate entity, and Danelle is just one of the shareholders in that. So I just want to answer that question as well. We can come back to it if there are more questions in that regard. Then, Chair, I will speed up a bit. So on the next slide is a summary of the cash flow in terms of our strategic actions. So the cash flow, essentially our plan for the corporate plan of 5 years, is made up of 3 elements. So we have an element of recapitalization. Then, of course, we have cash generated through our normal operations. The status today is that we have a debtors book of around 660 million. We intend to generate another 900 million, so around 1.5 billion of cash flow from customers. And Then, of course, we also have cash from strategic initiatives, Chair. So I'm not going to go through all the detail. If there are questions, we can take it later. But you can see in the, this is financial quarters, not calendar quarters. You know, we have the potential divestment of Hensoldt, where we have 30% equity. And here we can generate 160 million, gear ratio around 220. And I think a big one is the 2 billion on SEP. So maybe briefly just on that. So what are we looking for in strategic equity partners? Is we're looking for investment, technology, or market access. And we believe through that, just as a reference, I mean, the value of our 49% in Rheinmetall is around 1.5. So I believe the 2 billion is tangible. It's achievable. That's the key message. At the bottom, you can see our cost reductions so far and what we intend to do further. So if it's okay, I'm not going to go into details there. So, Chair, then on the NEL future state, so the process, in February, the management made an assessment and we presented to the board. We had some rigorous debates, detailed debates, many sessions on it. But in the end, we concluded on the strategy and what we should do. And we will do sort of major changes to the organization. We will divest. We will get out of loss-making businesses. We will sell equity in some businesses. We will partner in other parts. But the ultimate question is, if we can fast forward in 5 years, what does the NEL look like? What is the future state of the organization? So what is actually more important than divestments is, how do we grow the core capability? How do we make the missile capability even bigger and greater? How do we grow our artillery systems and so on to make it a sustainable long-term business? And ultimately, on the topic of technology, how do we secure new revenue streams? Most defense companies in the world are sort of migrating, transforming from traditional offensive weapons like missiles, artillery systems that can shoot far and so on, to more homeland security, to information systems, to data fusion, to fourth industrial revolution solutions. So these are the things that we are starting to think about. First objective was to stabilize the business. But how do we partake in fourth industrial revolution? And I want to reflect a bit on it, if I may. There are so many different views about, so what is this fourth industrial revolution? But essentially, the architect of that that presented at the World Economic Forum, he has three elements. It's about technology, so it's about artificial intelligence, it's about virtual reality, and it's about the Internet of Things. So briefly, how do we apply it to our world? So if you look at artificial intelligence, it's about sensor systems. It's about management of mass data to extract something. Just think in a South African context, crime intelligence, human trafficking, you know, all of these things, we can provide solutions to that. If you think about, Chair, virtual reality, and then I think about, you know, the new generation of kids, it's about Xbox and PlayStation 4 and whatever else. I'm not on top of those. If you see these virtual reality goggles and glasses that people wear, these things can be used for training, you know, for our police forces, for South African airways, etc. So these are the typical solutions in that domain. And then lastly, just briefly on the Internet of Things, this is all about connecting all sorts of manufacturing assets. So in a factory like PMP, you can optimize the flow of your operations and so on, by using smart technology, monitoring where we are, what the status is, the loading on facilities and so on. So this is, in a very broad and brief context, what we can do in terms of fourth industrial revolution to make a contribution. So I think this one, I'm not going to go through it in detail, Chair. I've touched on some of it already. But this is about, obviously, when we do strategic equity partnerships, we have to follow the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. And essentially, the short context is that we have to have an open, fair, transparent, and equitable process in that regard. And we will do that. We will absolutely make sure that we follow that. In terms of the future state then, so Chair and members of the committee, so let's start in the middle of this diagram is the core part. These are the parts that we want to retain, invest in, and build on. So it's about missiles and precision-guided munitions, artillery systems, infantry systems, system integration, and then cyber and cybersecurity. Okay, so missiles, I think, is understood. We also covered that at the meeting at PMP. Precision-guided munitions, Chair, as I explained, is where you take a, let's call it an unintelligent bomb or projectile, and you add sort of tracking capability to that, so you can fly it to a target. You know exactly where it is, and you can provide inputs in terms of where it goes and what it does. Artillery systems is typically our large caliber traditional G5, T5, G6 systems, 155 millimeter cannons that can shoot up to 70 kilometers. So this is where we still have a great advantage in the global defense industry. Infantry systems is a combination of machine guns, vehicle systems, etc. And also here, in terms of technology, remember we showed you at PMP a machine gun that was printed on a 3D printer. So that's also some technology advancement. System integration. Chair, here we are probably the only capability in the country to do what we call level 5 system integration. So just briefly, the hierarchy of products, you have components, you have products, and ultimately you have a system of systems, like a battleship or a fighter jet. So we can do integration on that top level, and not many many organizations can do that. So we have around 40 system engineers in that domain. Cyber security, I think, is quite well known. Then the next sort of focus, my apologies, is the Overberg test range, which we, of course, intend to keep on developing and maintaining. RDM, Rheinmetall, Denel Munitions, is important to us and quite a good contributor. Then I spoke about aircraft and engine MRO, is maintenance repair operations, where we maintain Oryx, Royfog, C-130, etc. Royfog attack helicopter, it's been around for many years, but there is a possibility and discussions, Chair, to make a Royfog Mark II. Now, of course, when you look into such a program, you need at least 60-70 platforms to make it economically viable. But there is interest, and there are some international players that want to partner with us to develop such a an upgraded Royfog. And we believe at the price performance that we think is possible, you know, we can position it in the market, and there are countries interested in that. Small and medium munitions is essentially PMP. Unmanned aerial vehicles, so here it's about unmanned aerial vehicles that can fly up to 400, 500 kilometers, do all sorts of surveillance. So think in the South African context about the maritime patrol, you know, we can possibly do something there with this. Armored vehicles, obviously, so a large part of that is Hoefeister. Then on the outer part of this diagram, Chair and Honorable Members, these are the parts that we want to, in some cases, exit completely. In other cases, we want to sell major parts of it. So aerostructures is one of those. The foundry in PMP is one of the operations that we want to exit. Essentially, here it's a make or buy decision in terms of do we do it ourselves or do we source it in from somebody else. And we believe we can do it more economically by buying those components without having any impact on the security of supply. Properties I spoke about, so we need to optimize properties. Gear ratio is not a strategic capability. S3 is part of our cyber disaster management system and so on, so we're thinking about that, how to optimize that. MECHEM is our traditional, the dark unit is in there, so the dogs for police, customs, etc., to detect explosive devices, narcotics, etc., is in that capability, and also our demining operations is in is MECHEM. SpaceTech, LMT, as I said, is a smaller one of our vehicle capabilities, around 120 million in revenue, around 100 people in that business, but unfortunately it's a one customer business going through a difficult time at the moment. Densecure, I don't know why, but we had our own insurance business chair. So we have decided to shut that down and go to the professionals that specialize in insurance. And then Optronics is essentially Hensel that I already spoke about. In terms of governance, I'm almost done. So I think quite important on governance, it's essentially a large part of what you asked for today. So a bit of history, the appointment of our current board was effected in April 2018. We have established all the board subcommittees, and they actively support us as the management in terms of our objective to improve governance and also to fully understand what went wrong in the past and why, and to remedy those historical things and to make sure that they don't happen again. That's very important. So the governance framework has been improved, including the board charter, committee terms of references, annual work plan in terms of legislation, and also we had some training as a board on King 4 implications and good governance. I will skip my appointment. Group executives and CEOs on divisional level. So we've largely completed this. We had a number of acting individuals, Chair, so we are now stabilizing the organization by making those permanent appointments. We have a new delegation of authority. We have a new supply chain policy. So we have, we've looked at the other SOCs, Transnet, SAA, et cetera, what they are doing, and use that as a reference to see how we can improve. Disciplinary processes to address governance failures. So we have started those disciplinary processes, Chair. I come back to some detail. Civil and criminal litigation process has been launched. We are actively engaged with the SIU, the Special Investigations Unit. Yesterday morning, I had a meeting with a police colonel looking into some of our cases specifically. Tomorrow morning, we will hand over an affidavit, a statement on some investigations into VR Laser, Danel Asia, and also the Chad contract. So also here we have made good progress. We are addressing the Auditor General audit findings, but as I briefly alluded to, we have made significant progress in terms of improving our systems. And for example, there was an audit finding on the management of irregular expenses. Now we have the systems in place. It has been verified, validated by the Auditor General. The main challenge we still have is the advanced income recognition. Because of the change in policy, how we implement it, we don't have, we had a high turnover of finance staff, we don't have an integrated finance system as well. So all of these things make it difficult to validate and verify the opening balances, especially if you go back 5 years. How do you make sure that it's proper and correct? So here we have a challenge. But we're working well with the Auditor General. We have great support. It's a good team effort. And I'm confident that that it will be better going going forward. We had a question I remember from the meeting at PMP about our audit outcome. We will probably still not have a good result this year. Okay. So, thank you, Chair. We are addressing irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But here again, fruitless and wasteful, I think we have a good control over it. It's predominantly related to penalties on late deliveries and so on because of the cash situation. And we're also trying to improve on that. And then we have good cooperation with the Zondo Commission. We have submitted our forensic audit reports to the Zondo Commission Chair, and we have regular interaction, and we are ready to support and to appear in front of the Commission as and when required. So can I ask Talib, the Chair of Audit, to make some comments about governance, if you want to add, please, Talib, if that's okay, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, we have completed a number of investigations in the Audit Committee, and there are still some ongoing investigations. We are proceeding where relevant with both civil action and also criminal action. At the last presentation we did to the committee, we have provided you an update on the bursary matter. We've now issued summons, and we've served summons on 3 of the 4 individuals. We are now at a pre-trial stage relating to the bursary matter. The VR Laser investigation and the Danel Asia investigations, both of them have been completed. And our board also took a decision due to the high-profile nature of them to get them reviewed by an independent firm of lawyers as well, and both the independent investigators and the lawyers confirmed the findings of the investigators, and as a result of that, we are now proceeding with the relevant action around that. I think around the audit itself, we are working towards releasing our financial statements during the month of September. It's not in full compliance to the PFMA because we would have liked to have done this in July, but there's been, as pointed out by the Group CEO, there's been a number of challenges that the board had to address. So we are on track to release the financial statements at the end of September, and we will then, once that's done, we will then release the financials to the public and to yourselves, and also give you details of the progress we made around clearing the Auditor General's matters.
Thank you, Talib. So, Chair, I want to just briefly comment on the development objectives. I haven't prepared a slide, but I know the numbers, so if it's okay, I just want to mention on that. So, in the last year, we've 83% of the people we employed is from ACI profile. Today, we have 62% of our total headcount is ACI profile individuals. We are proud also to have 27% of our workforce is ladies. And of that, 19.9% is ACI profile ladies. We have procured in the last financial year, 71.2% of our procurement is from preferential procurement organizations. But, I mean, honestly, with our cash situation, we couldn't do much. But we have a plan, we know the status, and we have identified our goals in terms of shareholder compact, in terms of what we intend to achieve in this regard. So thank you very much. I will conclude with that, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just a moment to sit back and think about what we presented to you this morning through the CEO. So thank you very much, CEO. When you are facing a turnaround situation such as Dinel, where when you arrive, the key issue is, as a board, figure out how you turn around the liquidity of the business. Like any other turnaround scenario, the first thing is to try and attempt to get to the root cause. And it's very, very difficult. But I think we have reached a comfort zone where we could say to the board that, to Parliament, that not only did we realize quickly that while Dinel has problems we couldn't explain or know the root cause of immediately, we saw that there was value to keep Dinel. Number two, having decided that there is something in this company that is worthwhile keeping for South Africa, the next step became, how do you then put together a value proposition that will say to the shareholder, this company is worth keeping when you do not know the numbers or the data? As we sit today, every issue that we didn't have answers for, especially on the financial results, the partnership with the Auditor General, and I will say this with no uncertain terms, was indispensable to get us to the point where, even as we are submitting our financials later, the AG has been extremely important in ensuring that we understand where our problems lie. So as a parliament, you may find out that next year when we come to you, what looked like great financial performance from 2014 to 2018, because we have been forced to review the numbers backwards because of the way people interpreted revenues in the past, that it comes down to normality, which is where we think things should be. So I would like Parliament to anticipate that. Secondly, a turnaround strategy forces you to not only look at the strategy, the operations, and the financials of the business, but it also forces you to look at whether or not you have the capacity to survive into the future. I believe that, to a large extent, what you are beginning to see emerging, where we are saying we have now realigned the businesses in the following units, we have now got an understanding of what could become core for us going forward. We have now even expressed that we wish that Dinel, while it is a defense industry player, could start looking at non-defense civilian activities where they could extend our technologies. By next year, it is our wish as a board that when we come to Parliament, we'll be saying, here is your base. This is what we believe Dinel can be able to do year on year financially. This is the sales that we've been able to do. Our approaches to manufacturing products are improving in the following manner, but this is a company that the country can leverage going forward. As a board, we believe that the main achievement we can ever do for you is to deliver a company that can stand the test of time for our country and stand alone. This is something that we haven't mentioned before. We as a board, and we have selected management in a focused manner to say, if the future of this country would be intertwined with a company like Denel, how do you make sure that it can stand alone, but because countries use Denel because of its sovereign connection, it will still be state-owned 100%, hopefully. We think this is achievable. We may not sound like we're there yet, but the base we've given to you today is an indicator that we are having a company that is worth surviving. It can export. It can stand alone in the future. There will still be a strong relationship with the state because countries come to us because we are owned by the South African government, not by the private sector. But there is no reason why Denel should depend on the fiscus. That is the way we see it as a board. And our escrow is almost complete. The shareholder approved the appointment of our group CFO this week. It's a woman, highly experienced. It completes for the board the core team that we believe will lead into a future structure, strategy, and operations that we wish to provide you with as a board after our 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Minister, do you want to?
Chair, absolutely nothing. I think the occasion was to interface with this. We're very confident with the presentation by the board. In our recent exchanges with them, these are the matters under discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members, I think it's all yours now to engage. This was comprehensive input, and I think those who participated in the oversight, they will also remember there were questions that they were raised. Those questions were to be continued. Therefore, don't feel bad if you feel that your question you raised has not been comprehensively dealt with. You would like to add something. We still have enough time to engage. Can we start? Honorable Mazom? And yes, yeah, followed by yourself. Okay, accordingly, I think you are in the chief. Start shooting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you to the Board of Denel for coming to present. I think it's fair to say that the press that Denel has received of late is not good. It's incredibly worrying in actual fact when we know that Denel can't pay salaries and when we get letters sent to us as members of parliament from employees showing that 85% of their salary or 75% of their salary will be paid. I took note right at the end of the presentation when Mama said that there is no way this company can count on the government to bail it out. But in actual fact, that's exactly what the company is doing. It is counting on the government to bail it out. And smaller bailout, granted, than we're giving to many of the other state-owned entities, but a bailout nonetheless in a country that's bankrupt. Our fiscus is suffering. So would you please take this committee into your confidence and tell us exactly how much money to date, while you've been board members, has been agreed upon to be paid in a government guarantee to you, and have you requested Treasury to set aside any further amounts for bailouts within the next two-year period, because they come in tranches. So I'd like to know what tranche period you have organized with Treasury. Now, when Donal came here in the Fifth Parliament, one of the very last meetings we had, there was a huge disagreement between what Treasury had agreed to and with what the Donal Board had agreed to. And in actual fact, it was in this very chamber. It got so bad that the committee refused to continue with the meeting because there was a fight going on between Donal and Treasury. Has that relationship been mended? To what extent? Are there now regular meetings happening with representatives of Treasury and Donal? And can we look forward to a better working relationship there? Then in terms of your staff, look, it's no secret. I've said it a million times and I'll say it a million times more. The Democratic Alliance strongly feels that Donal needs to enter private partnership deals. We see that that's your future. There are many armaments manufacturers across the world who would be interested in buying in shares and still retaining a large portion of Donal being a state-owned entity, but certainly a state-owned entity enhanced with a lot of public-private partnership deals. Are there any that you are currently looking at? Have you been approached by any firms, by any companies, and what is the reaction to such approaches? Because they are happening, we're reading about it in the papers. The deal with Saudi Arabia was of massive concern, massive, especially given our standing in the international sphere and our standing in the G20, our standing on the Security Council of the United Nations. Can you give us an update as to what's happening there? Because the last time the Donal Board was here, they couldn't give us a firm answer as to whether or not a deal had in fact been signed. So if we could just have an update on that. And then my last question, and I don't mean to put you in a precarious situation, but can we leave here today and safely tell employees of Donal that for the foreseeable future their salaries aren't in jeopardy? Because it's probably the number one concern that we as MPs get is people from Donal wanting to know whether or not they'll have their full salary paid at the end of the month. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I first want to go to page 11 on your presentation, the turnaround plan progress to date. It's actually the second line that interests me. It's about the winnable order pipeline. Now, a winnable pipeline is always a positive for any company, but what is your position as the CEO that you would be in a certain line after 24 months window period, you will break even, to put it that way, as profit-wise? Because if you look at also at your other points that you've stated, for example, the solid back order, that is also to your advantage to actually be profitable in the future. Then on the next slide on page 12, and that is the Hoefeister program. There's a word that you'd use, the political will and support. So is that the will and support of the Minister and Department of Defense, or were you referring to? I would like to hear your answer on that one. And thirdly, I just want to, I'm very glad that SARS is now sorted, because that's one man we don't want to cross swords with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Give us the financial challenges that Daniel is facing. What is the measure has the company take with regards to human resources in the effort of retaining the strategic skills and personnel, also to cut costs? With regard of the packages, how are the packages of the top financial structure, official structure, and how much of the total allocation for the compensation of employees do they account for? How does your skills development program align with the skill 7 priority and the fourth industrial revolution? How many people are benefit from that program? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Chair. Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I will start from the last chair, from the board chairperson, when you were assuring us. Can you please maybe assure us when you come out of this meeting to say General will be able and will be comfortable that we must keep the company and that company will also deliver on the mandate of the SOEs, because we must not lose sight of that. To the mandate, to say the mandate of the state-owned companies is for the decent employment through the economic inclusive growth. So can you please tell us why you must be comfortable and take us through even within the time frames on your turnaround strategy. And also on the self-sufficient of the Daniel, you said a Daniel company can stand alone. Can you tell us your progress and the time frames to achieve that? And also tell us to be comfortable to say within this time frame, you'll be able to do that before surviving on the fiscal and depending on the bailout. Thirdly, Chair, I'm very interested in the plans of the board and the executive of a Daniel company to integrate their services, their technical skills, their technical know-how, their experiences, and their capacity in assisting the other SOEs and integrating with the other SOEs. Because for me, Chair, it will be the benefit of this country and the benefit of the economic growth if we can find an integrated program within the SOEs so that together we can focus on the economic growth and also on the employment. Chair, on slide, that is after slide 5, on the financial performance, page 6, what lessons you can take as the board and the executive between 2018 the chair said before they moved on to the turnaround strategy they did get go back to say what happened. So in that process, what lessons and experiences have you identified, and what is it that you want to correct going forward, together with the issue of the responsibilities of the evaluation of a Daniel company contractors, together with the new procurement policy, and making sure that you don't fall again to that period. Last chair for me is for the department itself. What is the role of the department? Can the department take us through and take us to comfort to say the progress that you are seeing with the new appointment of the board and the progress in appointing the executive? Are they comfortable and they can assure us within the time frames on the progress? And what would be the role of them in making sure that we achieve, in making sure that we deliver in our mandate? Thank you, Chair.
Good morning to everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. Meeting for the second time in the Berkeley Field. Chair, I want to say, because I think it was one of the members' preamble, that it looks as if we need Daniel more than we needed before. The current situation, as we talk, you know, over the TV last night, you could see people violent and all that. So it means we can't do without an organization of this nature. In fact, I want to say a state without the security is doomed. It is very much susceptible to a situation where it can really easily be attacked. If we were in a situation like all other African countries, where people simply organize the coups, we would definitely be vulnerable in a situation where Daniel was very weak. Thanks for the effort. I'll change the tone, in fact. I wish to congratulate you. You are too different from what you presented from us last time. I'm not sure whether the questions that we gave you has a little bit empowered you to find out exactly what we need as a committee. And I've got a feeling that for any person to work diligently, at least just a tap on the shoulder, is needed. I must say that some of the questions I had in mind, you have almost covered them, but it doesn't mean that I don't have questions, in a sense. You know, I'm a person that says at times, you know, easier said than done. Seated around here in the boardroom, we may say all glossy things. You know, I share some of the things that colleagues have raised, that in your presentation there are things that I was in fact beginning to question. It could be the time frame as raised by Mkhwanazi, that in all these things that you have said, can we be guaranteed of the time frame? It tells us as politicians that we need to do more and do quite often the oversight, and it must be very, very much vigorous in effect, because if we don't do it, we will be in a position where we may lose track. The things of the lessons that you have learned between the years, where I call it, it's in fact an infestation. Some other people will understand. Those, it's only 2 years. We count Daniel if we look at the history. Whether it's 34, it's 1934, or it's 38, but in some of the records it talks about the 1992. Whether it's those 81 years or it's about 27 years, but I'm saying out of all, only for 2 years we have crumbled, perhaps those that were looting, crumbled Daniel to such an extent that it's now crawling. It will be for your challenge as members that you assure us that the presentation that you have given us today is the presentation that in fact will take us through. I am of the view in your presentation that says you may abandon, I'm not sure whether permanently or for keeps, you may abandon some of non-core activities. You'll then focus in order to cut costs. Yes, I buy into that as a person, because you don't have broader shoulders to assimilate all that. But there are some elements, or perhaps all those other functions, that you may find yourself opening up for competition when Daniel has in a position to stand on its own and now you want to go back and do such activities. I'll be interested as well, because we are saying that we want to learn from the experience that in fact dropped us down, that what could have been the total value of all these hiccups we have experienced. Some of the things that you did not answer, which in fact was the question asked, is how do we plan the recovery? I'm understanding that in your presentation you have talked about meeting with the investigators, you have established a good relationship with the Zondo Commission. One will believe to say, yes, those are the routes you are beginning to follow. But I won't leave the question, because I think for me it's critical to do all those things. It's the same thing. How do we avoid the recurrence? I'm saying, has the organization taken the introspection to say, people that we are now having as a team are not part of the people who may begin to take us back to the looting situation? How do you do it? I don't know. But those are the things, because I want to believe that one individual or two individuals perhaps taking instructions from where they were taking the instructions from started all these irregular practices which then affected Daniel as the name. Yeah, I think with that I would love to leave it at that stage. But what's more critical, because it's a question that as well has been asked, which I wanted to ask, that yes, we talk the recapitalization, we talk the extension of the 3.5 to 5 years, we talk all those. The biggest question is, if we are self-sufficient as the NAC, what are we saying? Are we still going to come back to us? Because as a committee or as politicians, we've got to come to a stage that says it looks we have recovered from being dwarfs. You know, I want to understand that Dinel has been a very giant, if you want to call it like that, a giant company that at times it was competing or even toppling America. What can stop us from doing that now? Because if you can stand toe-to-toe with America and do all those things, the reputation, the record that you have created, all those things, going back, some other things, I don't know, perhaps the DM will help us here. At times, I want to get to a situation where, if ever there are rules, are we allowed to interact with your predecessors? Because some of the things, yes, we have traveled, the CEO said he has traveled all over to try and secure some of the things, I hope, with the Egypt as well, the India. I remember at times I read something that was saying, the president was saying, the India, this thing must be negotiated now. Those are all things that we want to do. We have secured all those things. And the 30 billion pipeline, which has been mentioned as well, have we seen it pocketing that in our pockets? Do we see value in all those things? I think we'll be happy if things go progressively. But mine is, I'll be happy if we meet 3-4 times a year so that we are sure when we leave you, we leave you very much guaranteed that now you can walk without any support. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ndlozi.
Thanks very much. Well, the first concern or request I would have is that you share the reports in relation to Denel Asia that you say you have conducted. So that, let's assume that we have not received anything, because you can't just say they are concluded and all of that. We must get them. So there must be a presentation like this that takes us through the truth of what happened, properly done. And I would, under your guidance, Chairperson, hope you give them a deadline. Since it's ready, it can even come next week. It shouldn't be a problem. We have to be taken through that. Because in the deliberations, the CEO blames the net profit trajectory on state capture. And I was like, what is that? We're becoming a bit of phrase mongers around that thing called state capture. Because we in the opposition, you see, we're not part of your corruption, but we're part of the state. So you have to say, what is the problem? What happened to those, the trajectory of, I mean, look at the graph that you are giving us. And it's a bit confusing because on one hand, they say there's still a forensic audit that is taking place which may draw the 2014 to 2017 numbers even further down. I don't know that. What you have given me here is a serious... This is not inexplicable in business. Just in a single year, from 2017 to 2018, it's a bit of... from this alone, you shouldn't have been appointed as a new CEO. If I just look at this, this is the reality of your leadership. Because this is when you are in charge. So I would hope that even those forensic audits come to give us a much a proper picture. But it looks like your plan, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, is that we have stabilized by staying out of business. That is how we have stabilized, cancel contracts that were not working, cut this, and that's how we have stabilized. And then your solutions are, let us sell those things that we have not engaged in. That if I'm correct, that is basically what is happening here. You are saying, for instance, you must get out of aerospace, space tech. There is a list. I can't remember which page, but you have some table there. On the copy I have doesn't have page number, but strategic action on cash flow targets. Exit aerospace, exit PNB, PNP foundry, exit space tech, and then are those the things you are planning to sell? Is that what the business plan is, that we must actually dispense with these aspects of Denel? Is it private public partnership? Is it selling them completely as the DA prefers? Who are the companies that are interested? Who are these companies? Say there are 40 companies that are interested in buying Denel or in buying its aspects, or what you call non-core aspects. Who are these companies? And I would be very interested to know if SAAP is one of them, the company you used to head. I don't know, I can't remember the, but that German company. Now, the last point, the penultimate point. You said that there was a salaries crisis last year at some time, and the Minister Jamnandas intervened, and then you managed to give everyone their salaries. How did he intervene? Where did he get the money? Do you know where the money is from? Can you be a bit specific there? What exactly happened? Because that will help us to make sense of the future. Did you borrow it? If you borrowed it, from who? Was it from Treasury? If so, how much was it? And then the final point. I don't think you can sustain the idea of you want to diversify Dineo. You have to diversify. That's just the reality. That's been the trajectory of the company. And as a state-owned entity, the history of state-owned entities across the world that take bold future decisions. You know, Toyota was a company that manufactured sewing machines. And for 40 years as a state-owned entity, it didn't have any profits. There were even marches of thousands of people to say the taxpayers' money is being wasted because it kept being bailed out. But the Japanese understood the strategic importance of having their own automobile. And that you've got to protect an asset, including imposing tariffs, until it's competitive to compete on international platforms. This is even much older than Toyota, the NEL. And its success story is precisely that one. Its history is precisely that one. That, because it was sanctioned, but you can think about sanctions as tariff as well. It had to grow under the most difficult conditions. The conditions it's under now are incomparable to the conditions actually it was shaped under. So when you are proposing selling it, you're being lazy. And whoever is buying it makes it work. It's a proof of the fact that it means you had no clue. So there are only two possibilities. You are lazy, you are inefficient, or you are working with those people to literally have it bankrupt and then sold, which is like sabotage. So diversification is at the center of the future, not just of Dineo, but a lot of these state-owned entities. You produce aircraft, your aerostructures, for an example, those are capabilities of... Why are you not saying, okay, we're planning to produce ambulances? We don't have, we'll need, that's just the bottom line. As long as there are human beings in South Africa, you're going to need ambulances. There is a tender, and the final thing I will say, there is a discussion of a tender in the SAPS at the moment of getting each and every policeman a camera, which is a... It's been there in Euro-America for a very long time. There are cars that fitted cameras and all of that. And then these cameras are also linked to drones. So that when I'm chasing a suspect, instead of a helicopter, you've got a drone which is much more efficient in navigating. It's even not that noisy. It can surveil people through its powerful zooming capacities and all of that. The SAPS is entertaining that entire area. There's a tender, the person who's about to get that tender, I'm told. Why was it not Dineo? Why are you not immediately holding talks that we can provide this? We can manufacture it locally? Because I can tell you now, it's a huge tender and none of those electronics will be manufactured locally. Diversification is the future. There is absolutely no... If we have to bail you out, we must. But you must project. Not to 10 years. You must project into a future that this is the trajectory of the technology we are going to invest in its different aspects. Okay, not another helicopter. It's fine if you do another helicopter, I get that. But there are consumerables that are immediately possible now. Even in the security industry, domestically, in domestic surveillance, I hear, what are those products?
If we have to bail you out, I saw that you got, it's about 1.4 billion or something that you might need from Treasury. It's not a lot. We can properly give you more than that if you've got a proper trajectory, projecting into a well-distant future, taking into consideration, one, the opportunities that lie with the fourth industrial revolution, but secondly, the fact that there are things that are just unavoidable that human beings are going to need forever, where you can, you've got industrial capacity that actually is very massive. And I really think you must disabuse yourselves. Otherwise, you shouldn't be leading this state entity if you want to sell it. You shouldn't. You are the wrong people. You are supposed to be insisting. Don't be scared of those things that the DA said. The DA has a bad macroeconomic understanding. You do not save the fixers, the fiscals, by not spending. You have to spend more. That is how you save. You have to go out there and boost demand. You have to go out there and boost demand. Have people have money so that they can have more taxes to pay. There's no... Austerity has never worked. That's what has been happening in the last 40 years in global economics. It has not worked. You have to go out and spend. That's what the Chinese did. That's what the Asian tigers did. You have to spend more. There is no saving the economy by not spending. If you want more money, you must get. But it has to be with an intelligent business plan, not of recovery, of diversification. That this is how we're going to grow, by investing in these technologies. You have even cut your research budget. The research relationship you had with CIR, if I'm not mistaken, has ended. You are on a trajectory, basically, of privatization. Those are the things you should be investing more in. You should be asking boldly for more money, Chief. Like you did under apartheid. Ask for more money and say, this is the future. You don't invest in this. There are no people who are going to come in South Africa to create those jobs. Those companies, I'm very sure, that want to buy those aspects, they want you to get out of competition, so that they can be the only ones that supply in those spaces. That can't be the logic of your future. So I'm persuading yourselves and the rest of us that the idea is not to retreat. The idea is come up with a plan that says, give us more money. We're going to actually make more, we're going to recover it in 20 years. But from there, we'll be saved for good in this way.
Thanks, Honorable.
That's how you do state-owned entities, not what we're hearing.
Thanks, Honorable Ndlozi. Yeah, I tried to be tolerant as much as I can.
No, my apologies, I'll be next.
The portfolio committee. I also, sure you didn't put your hand up, that's why I'm come.
Thanks, Chairperson. I did put it up when Honorable Swart came. I thought he was going to speak. Yeah. Okay. All right. So you must thank me. I've opened up for you to speak. Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being away. So if some of the questions have been covered already, feel free. But I just want to say from my side, I was very impressed with our visit last week, and although we didn't visit everywhere, it was very good and to be there and to walk around and to see the commitment of the young engineers, the research and development under very difficult financial considerations. And I trust that the board and the new CEO will take the process forward of dealing with the past, the present, and the future. Past with all the inquiries. I'm on top of what's happening with the inquiries from us. I sit on the Justice Committee, so I'm fully aware of what's happening there. The present, the bailout that you've now got, your book orders that are there. But it is an incredible opportunity for the research and development and building on that incredible capacity. And to me, I felt a sense of pride, although we understand the difficulties of the past. I remember, Board Chairman, when you said, this is incredible, this bowls me over, and it did. And I felt similarly with those young engineers with the Badger units and that, which is very, very encouraging that we are one of only 5 countries in the world that develops missiles, that we still hold the record for the furthest artillery shells. But to develop that defense capability for research and development going forward is incredible. And understanding the sovereign strategic value and the intellectual property that must be protected, Chair, I think that is a point that is very, very important when one considers going forward and how it is very necessary for us to assist in stabilizing the now. And it's highly regrettable of what happened on the state capture. We in the opposition fought that. We saw it coming. We saw what was happening. Unfortunately, we were not able to prevent it. Now we're sitting with it. We've got to deal with it. We've got to move forward. CEO, you've been appointed since January, so you haven't been in the position very long. That financial year, the graphs are pointing to a downward trend. That was prior, if I understand correctly, prior to you being appointed. But of course, one has to understand the severe financial situation that you are faced with. Now, given that, Chair, you remember when we had discussions last week that it is unacceptable to me that your main clients, which is the SANDF, are cutting back on their orders from you, which are placing you under financial duress. And I would ask you to indicate as far as you are able, possibly bearing in mind your commercial confidentiality, how far are the orders being placed from the SANDF, particularly relating to munitions? You mentioned that. And is there a prospect of the SANDF buying from, and the SAP in particular? You've got those facilities up to now. They were your main client, and it seems that they're looking to buy from elsewhere. Those existing contracts are very important. To me, the issue of various other units that we saw, and I'm sure the questions were asked about Asia and those contracts that are running there, what is happening to cancel those. But Chair, I think it's important for us also to bear in mind the constraints under the National Conventional Arms Control Act, when maybe, I don't know if you touched on that as well, you probably did, and then so it is, to me, very important how we cooperate with the different portfolio committees, in particular the SANDF Portfolio Committee, SAPS Portfolio Committee. Here is a massive asset, that is suffering severe financial constraints, and surely there should be political accountability as to where they are purchasing their items when you've got a supplier here. So that is just shortly from my side. I would also like to know about the CSIR, that cancellation of contract, and the reduction, the impact of the reduction of your staff on research and development going forward. Because we know most countries, their defense is hugely part of research and development. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, for indulgence. Chairperson, let me just quickly start by just passing our remarks, perhaps, with the committee. As we know that the nation is mourning, and would like to send condolences to the families affected by the young woman that we lost to femicide, and I want to say may their souls rest in peace. Chair, let me also acknowledge perhaps the oversight that we took. We're with you, we saw wonderful work that you do. In fact, we came wondering ourselves what can be done and what needs to be done. But I think because there's a political head, or rather the executive head, I want to engage firstly with the Deputy Minister. So that as the person responsible for policy, ensuring that there's oversight over the DPE, including the denial itself, they do share as well from our side, one, the issue of the policy. Them understand that we cross-cutting with the defense. How often do you meet with the implementing policy arm being the defense ministry, since you've taken office, and what are the issues that are coming out that you're sharing, and particularly on the issue of Denel not getting orders. Specifically, have you engaged, now that you are saying that you as an executive must deal with issues of contracts or tenders, but it is affecting, because previously Denel used to get chunk of orders and now they stopped sitting. Have you engaged around that? And we know SNDF doesn't have money. In fact, if there's a budget vote that has got serious budget cuts, it's defense and that's very disturbing. But they do have financial constraints. It's not a secret. I want to know on, and it might seem controversial, but I think it's very important, the issue of lifestyle audits. Have we conducted any lifestyle audits that you know of in the executive of the PE SOCs? And will the executive as well, if they've not done the lifestyle audit, will they consider, meaning the minister and the DM, taking lifestyle audits themselves? Why I'm asking this question is on the backdrop of what we're coming from. And we're not going to shy away from dealing and over-reiterating the issue of date of capture, because as a result, this is a committee that was born out of that. And we're committed to take the work forward of the Fifth Parliament. And the Zondo Commission highlights the fact that there was an oversight that was not done properly from the oversight arm and being the legislature, meaning this committee, as a loophole. And I want to plead to the department, or rather to Denel, to say, please don't hide information from us. You'll be doing disservice to us. Because Zondo Commission came because that Fifth Parliament Portfolio Committee had to cripple and cripple right at the end. They were discovering things. So that there isn't this this operandi attitude. You know, members of parliament, you're going to come here, they're going to ventilate, ask you things, perhaps that you think that are irrelevant, that nothing to do with you. You come as executive, you sit here, you didn't even say anything, but you are responsible for certain entity, so it's fruitless, and so forth and so on. And it goes on. Sixth Parliament were done, we leave, next ones will come, you guys' contracts get reinstated and all sorts of things. So I'm just saying, can you make us and really commit yourself to working with us closely and giving us the real information status quo? DM would want to really have interactions with the board, because as much as there's too many middlemen, so the board is also an overseer, rather an oversight arm. And I saw in the way the minister was making his own debate, or rather this budget vote debate, appointments of the boards. We saw he appointed, was it last year? He appointed about 12. He went on this year to appoint 3 more board members. And I want to know how many board members, so there are about 15 now from the report I have. So how many board members were expected to have, and why did we think there was a need? Perhaps not a question you can answer today, but I would be interested. But furthermore, to say to the board chairperson, let's welcome your desire, especially your re-energized energy that you keep on portraying, that we really need to save Denel. It's very important that we need to have. But from where I'm sitting, we need to have a serious discussion with the full board to understand, firstly, your structure, meetings, how many meetings you have with the executive, your sister department as well, in terms of defense, the issues of appointments, your responsibilities, your remuneration packages, the skills obviously we have in your CVs, but the ability for you to provide oversight and hold management accountable. I'm dealing with governance, by the way. So we want to make sure that when we say to you there's been ills that has happened, we're able to gauge and say, hang on, this is where the problems actually occurred. So I'll move for this committee that we need to have one-on-one and interactions with the board where we don't have the board bringing Daniel. We can call Daniel and Daniel comes to us. So the same way we can call the board. So I'm making that pronouncement. Again, reviewing and recalibrating the NDP regularly in order to ensure improved implementation. Do we do that? Private public deals, DM, do we have appetite to enter into those, like the question was asked before? DM, did we consider or do we consider working with the Department of Trade and Industry and National Treasury in addressing localization strategies, resettling of trade and investment cooperation to stimulate and support small businesses and employment initiatives, reduce barriers to trade in services, which are often labor-intensive, investment, industrial value chains. The issue of youth unemployment, the department, I want to ask, what are we doing about it? You can tell us what you're doing about it. Financial statements, we know you didn't submit last year. Are you going to be able to submit this year? Do you have internal auditors? Do you have external auditors? Misaligned stakeholder environment, who are those and how are they assisting? Issues of staff morale, and obviously is on the commission. You will think that it had had an impact. But I want to know, have you had any resignation as a result? We want to check if people running away, because often in public service, you're accused of something, you see some procurement thing that happened, the person just resigned, they're gone, we move on, life moves on. So can we be told how many of those resignations have you had? You think the staff morale in the challenges can be improved, or if you're improving it, how are you improving it where we are? Issues of the salaries and that you're going to pay, we saw it now, and of course, I mean, they are concerned. We are also concerned about it. Are we able going to be able to pay people their salaries? The summons on bursaries. Somebody spoke about the bursaries. That was obtained. Is it four people? I'm not too sure. Look, it's okay. It happened. Now that you're saying you're issuing summons, I want to find out those summons. Who are they directed to? And what are you? Are you recovering the bursary in terms of monetary value and the punitive of it? What is your intention? There are learners or rather beneficiaries here, as much as they might have their parents. So that's what I want to know. Who is it directed to? And are you going to be punitive to the beneficiaries? And is it fair? And I want to think those beneficiaries are young people. I don't want to entertain who was the parent. I know the politicking of it, but there's three more other persons involved. But I need to find out, is it going to be punitive? Are you going to restrict those learners, beneficiaries from flying and continuing? It's not easy, this bazaar. This is a very difficult bazaar to obtain. You need a highly intellectual learner to go through this, and I commend them for that. So I want to know, are you going to be punitive? The minister in the investigations in his SONA, not SONA, but the budget vote, he's speaking about the pending legal recommendation on disciplinary actions. I want to be taken, the disciplinary actions, are there any continuing insofar as denial employees implicated in this report? And it keeps on reiterating that you're going to wait for Zondo to give you the report for you to be able to take action. Like I said, we'll have an issue where people, persons, will just simply resign. You go to them, you'll find them insolvent. They would have left without billions. I'm interested, what is our recovery? Are we recovering anything? But also, are we intending to look into, as much as we want legal advice, there's a lot of, there are public relations or other public administration when you get conditions of employment and all of that, when DC processes must proceed, especially when you look and you've got the tools to have checks and balances on what has happened. Not to wait for Zondo. Zondo is busy. But the organization must continue. Are we going to suspend anything until the commission tells us what happened in our institutions that we are running? We can't. That's irresponsible. Anyway, we don't have Jamnandas. In fact, it's out of order, Chairperson. The rules here apply. If you've got Honorable Minister Gordhan, we're not called, I'm not Honorable Judith, I'm Honorable Chabalala. And that must be called out of order, Chairperson. I thought I didn't want to disturb because it's important we have the sessions, but we don't want to politic. We want to get to the issue of the day. So I just wanted just to highlight that. Trajectory, well distant. We don't want it, but near future, we want it now. Not in the distance, we want it in the near now, because we want to clean up. We're not going to be doing 20 years future of whatever. Let me just get to my last point, Chairperson. I carried the presentation, took an hour and 30 minutes. So as members, we're interacting with us. I know, I'm trying not to. Corporation addressed the AG audit findings. I want to know National Treasury, the issue of liquidity challenges. Are they meeting you halfway, and what do you want from them? I don't want to speak about what you've written. I'm seeing different statistics from 2017-18 and here we are in 19. New supply chain policy. We saw you got a disclaimer. You've got lots of issues around your unauthorized, irregular expenditure. And you are saying in the governance you're going to give us new supply policy. Could we be finished with that? I'm really interested. We don't want to do tenders. We don't do that. But we want to see what are the checks and balances that you are putting in this new supply chain policy. As I said, I've spoken about civil and criminal litigation process. It says they're going to be launched. How many? Do we know what is it that we need to recover? Are we waiting for A's of the commission to tell you the intensity of the damage in the institution that you are running? Identified suppliers and customers, visited technology, you're speaking about markets as a CEO. I'm kind of interested in that, and I think that's a good report you're giving us, where you're telling us the 40 who are interested. I want to know, how do we protect the sovereignty in that context that Honorable Swart was talking about? We don't want to sell our talent in your market. For instance, somebody comes and offers a big chunk just for you to sell. Are you going to do that? So you resist. Deputy Minister, last thing. I'm closing my book. Okay, let me in fact leave it. I think you should.
Honorable Kwangwa, I think you must have some questions.
No, Lord Chair, I'm still trying to find my footing. Let me follow the discussions. Maybe when there's an opportunity later, I'll ask questions. That's fine.
Okay, let me first declare that I'm a fan of Denel. I have a tie now of Denel. I also don't want Denel to be privatized, you know. And in my interaction with Denel, I sort of fully close to what Honorable Ndlozi raised, though not that posture, not in that posture. But I think the content of his concerns, I seriously agreed with. When we were interacting with Denel, I was shocked, Honorable Ndlozi, to discover that cars are made there, trucks, these big things. And my first question to the CEO, I think, was who accompanied us, that how can we not have a car in South Africa that is produced in South Africa if we have these guys doing what I'm seeing in front of me? it was not only at Dinel, also at Transnet. I've seen that. And I think we are shooting ourselves in the foot. If you were part, maybe you did go there at some point in our absence, but I think the whole attitude towards Dinel was changed by my visit there. That's why I strongly believe what you are saying is 100% correct. We need to find a way out. To me, my worry and my fear with the radical involvement of private sector, to me it's like a remuneration or a compensation for the damage they have done. Because public sector, I'm still looking for a public sector that corrupted itself. I'm still looking for that public sector where there is this public entity. Workers there decided to corrupt the institution on their own without the involvement of the private sector. In most of all our institutions, all of them, including all these entities, these public enterprises, we are having troubles there because of the involvement, all of them, the involvement of the private sector. It's private sector that corrupted those institutions. It's them that offered bribes to our public servants. It's them that continued to loot through these destructive employees of those institutions who are supposed to run these entities. Therefore, to me, while I won't say there must be no involvement, was the damage, looking at the reality of the situation currently, some mechanism need to be found to deal with the situation. It could also be at some point involving some private investors there. But to me, it must not be done in a manner that we lose control to them. But I think I do have a trust with those boards. I do have a trust with the staff that is there until they also did what their colleagues did in the past. But for now, I think we're still capable of doing. My fear is that we need to find a way of dealing with the situation, but don't make the private sector as a, some kind of a holy role player that can help to heal that situation. They can't heal what they are. In fact, I'm fearing that they will corrupt it more if they found any hegemony there. Therefore, the way they are involved, it must be scrutinized and it must happen under the control of a capable leadership. Secondly, I heard that you have, in your slides 18, you have a category there of areas that have been identified to be exited. And I'm just looking at the list of them. Also taking consideration to what Honorable Ndlozi, that's why I had to be tolerant with her talking very long. Him. Oh, see, sorry, it looks good. And then now, it can be, we are living in a non-sexist society. Some she's do have beard anyway. Now, I'm saying these areas that I have identified, are we not narrowing ourselves? What informs, let me just ask, what informs that list of entities or areas that need to be exited? I would like to get that. My second question that linked to that is also the fact that we are faced with human trafficking, with violence against women and children, with xenophobic attacks, on foreign national violent protests and everything. All those issues, these are current ills that are confronting South Africa. How DINEL can assist us? I think let's go. I'm trying to be practical on what the Honorable Dozi was trying to assist us with. Now, last question. You have spoken of the morale of employees that is improving, something highly appreciated, because you will never operate efficient and effectively with the morale of the staff that doesn't have any hopes, you know, on that particular entity. But you again saying you are intending to cut cost at a HQ level, if I'm correct, and you talk about 24, if I was listening careful, of employees that you have to, I'm subjected to correction there. I was trying to check how do you reconcile this morale that is improving with the intention to cut costs. In what way are you going to cut those costs that is not going to perhaps influence or affect the morale of the workers? I think another thing that I suggested that I still think it needs to be dealt with by DINEL is public relations department. In fact, all these, Honorable Deputy Minister, all these entities, I didn't need to go to DINEL to really know what is taking place there in the current life that we are living, where the information is moving fast and everything. I think we need to have that. Also, I was shocked with what was happening at the Transnet when I got there. Otherwise, as an ordinary South African, I would be able to understand really what is taking place there up until I went to that to those areas. Therefore, I think we need some kind of this department. If it's there, I must say it's very poorly performing. You know, it needs some checkup. Thanks. I think it's your time now. I don't think you'll take hours with these questions because there are people who still need some short bites there.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the parliamentarians for very challenging questions. Some of them are the type of questions that require us to go back, write a report, and if anything, send in that report with all of the correct details. But as an attempt to provide some answers. Let me say to the parliamentarians, we put our hands up to come and assist in the restructuring of the SOEs because we believe in them. We were not sitting somewhere doing nothing and just thought, somebody helped me get a role. We are here, especially in this board, as individuals that believe we cannot sit aside when our country is facing challenges. We volunteered and said we will come and support the state, rebuild our SOEs. Some of us ran SOEs. We have gone up and down with SOEs. We believe in them and we understand their governance. Unfortunately, what the parliament is facing is that we are a restructuring board. We are a board that has to set the basic right. In other words, I would love to say to you that the future vision of what DINEL could be would come from us. Unfortunately, we are the cleanup board first, so we are the ones that deal with the bad part. So what you are receiving today is really a plan that looks at, with a liquidity challenge, what do you look at when you're looking at the underlying causes? You're looking at where you're spending, how you're spending. You're looking at revenues, how your revenues are coming in. you're looking at the people that are supposed to deliver for you. Are they right? Are they having the site operation systems to deliver for the customers that they have? Where are their customers today? What happened? And based on that background, you try and build a strategy and operations plan and see how it comes around. And unfortunately, because of the austerity that the country and the state is under, you will always see that even when we receive a 1.8 billion recap, Honorable Mazoni, we already were given 1.8 announced. It comes with conditions as well, and those conditions are, again, I believe the government saying in doing our oversight of government only, we want to make sure that how you spend that money is going to be done properly. So take us as a board that is just cleaning up to try and build you an appropriate base upon which all the dreams and capabilities that you think are possible within DINEL is going to be possible. We sadly are not going to be able to give you the dream yet, because we are just trying to prove to you that there can be a core upon which you can build DINEL going forward. Again, the relationship with the Treasury and the DPE, because we came in 2017, we recognize that there may have been relationship breakdowns between the previous boards and the Treasury. I can say without any doubt in mind that the interaction through the leadership of DPE between ourselves and the Treasury has been quite strong, because we had a serious liquidity challenge above others. Treasury needed to know that we were going to do things right. DPE was trying to get us to put together plans that would be formidable and sustainable. So when you see us putting a plan here that we think we could do partnerships as well on different, like in slide 18, where the CEO was trying to show you what is on our table. As a board, the fact that these things are there doesn't mean that we don't go through the rigor and analysis to understand whether or not you actually want to do a partnership or you want to sell. So that work is being done now. The plan is but a plan. The execution of it, we have to go through and ensure that we can answer the questions that came again from the chair. Are you sure you're not going to be selling our silver or our china? Believe it or not, as a board, when you get a letter from Treasury telling you you must sell even land, we look at PFMA and say, when we do, we better be able to account as a PFMA why we sold that piece of land. I used to be the CEO of AXA, and I know how much in rebuilding the airports, we struggle to get land for future expansion of airports. So to be able to act on it as a board, you should hear our debate. We will account to DPE and Treasury on why that piece of land was sold. Because the PFMA says you must say why it is the right thing to do for the company at the point in time. So the best thing I can assure you about this business plan is to say to you the execution of it will have to happen under your oversight. If we go ahead and sell 49% shares in Company X, we will account to why we made the judgment that the 49% would be good. But let me remind you of something. The complexity, let me put it simpler. It is important that we simplify how DINEL works. And that we are able to justify anything that we are going to be doing in that business plan. Like you, we want this DINEL to have a strong base upon which to rebuild. When you don't have money, which is where we were from day one on April 8th to today, You know, the balancing act of what is a priority today is literally about trying to increase the revenues and trying to reduce costs. So that's where we have been for 2 years. That we don't have the brightest ideas on how the partnerships would each evolve. Our management sometimes feels very strongly that they've got a pipeline. As a board, we still want to put them through the same process. Come through us before anything goes ahead and gets finalized. We'll explore partnerships. Some of them have served us extremely well. We are reviewing the subsidiaries we have across the world. We are trying to draw lessons. It's not a simple blueprint, but I can assure you that we would like to work transparently with you, provide you the correct data and information so that we can account to why we made certain decisions at a point in time. There are some detailed questions that I will eventually hand over to the CEO to respond to, and I'm going to ask the Chair of Audit with regards to the investigations, how far they are. I'll hand over to him to try and give more detail, and again through DPE, where we need to be providing reports, some of them are ready. You will guide us on the process back to Parliament. But not to put, I was challenged on the concerns about employees earning salaries. I just want this Parliament to accept that before we came on April 8, 2017, you were paying salaries for people who produced nothing for about 10 years. This Parliament did. That we are here to try and make sure that Dinel can produce something for this country. Support us, please. So whenever I hear the outcry, because staff members write to you, I want you to remember the taxpayers have been paying their salary for no productivity for many years. Let's work together to find them the correct base. Most of them love Dinel. They want to serve. They want to produce. You've seen them. There will be a way for us to have the denial that I think we are all beginning to love very much. It's not easy to face a scenario where you don't know whether you're paying salaries or not. But I think after the 1.8 billion injection, we have a better future to start paying guarantees for the new sales that we are doing so that we can be able to start generating more income into the business. Lessons learned. We were asked a lot about lessons learned. I think as a board, and I just want to remind everybody, our CEO just came in January. And in January, to help us finalize this turnaround plan, which could give us good value, is what he has been able to achieve. However, it is critical that maybe we produce a small set of slides on some lessons learned, and at the right time, through the guidance of the chair, we will try and deal with those and find the best way to bring them to you. Red Sosi, I wish your vision about if we believe in something, let's invest in it. It's so appealing. I'm hoping that when we give you the base of financials and what Dinel can do and its people, you allow yourselves, DPE, and the country to dream about what to do with it, because that base is possible. But one of you asked, why do we have then so many expenditures that are irregular and so on? You must remember Dinel of the past asked to not comply to PFMA. So as the Auditor General forces us to go back 5 years, our numbers of what was actually irregular gets bigger and bigger. Because for a while Dinel thought that Treasury will allow them to not comply to PFMA. And to some extent, they continued a little bit, even if the Treasury and DPE had said no, you must comply to PFME. But as the CEO has said, we went with this board, we now have got the policies, the Auditor General is happy, and the future looks much better than the past. We will get back to proper R&D when we can afford. We mustn't lie to you. Dinel used to be the one place where anybody who was fired from somewhere would be placed in. They'll go from SABC. Where do you find them? You find them employed in Dinel. Everybody that would be fired everywhere was here. So part of the ballooning of support services is because of people that didn't do any work. So balancing whether you keep them or they must go is something that I think management must need calls on, but guided by proper policies and principles of government. We won't sell your businesses out of sheer fear of where we are. We want to get back to CSIR. We do great work together. We want to give you the best information possible for you to be able to do your oversight. Your fears are appropriate. You don't want us to go amok selling all things and in the end we find out that we need them for Dinel. Then I'm going to allow the chair of audit to talk about our investigations. There was a request that if there were any reports that are ready that you may want to see them. I think we'll take a guidance from DPE and the chair to see how that gets done. And I want to assure you, Dinel inspires you. The deeper you go and you remove issues, the more you learn. But you can't help but be inspired by the potential the country has. Over to you, Chair of Audit.
Thank you, Chair. So addressing a couple of points that have been made, our commitment as the board is to comply with the 16 principles of the King Code of Good Governance, and that's clustered into four areas, which is namely ethical culture, and this is starting from the board to the rest of the organization. So we have that as a firm commitment. Effective control, that's also one of the lessons we've learned, is around poor risk management, especially in terms of how we manage our programs. And that talks to our delegation of authority as well. Performance and evaluation, you've made the point, Honourable Member, that staff have been coming to you around salaries. I think equally our appeal to you would be, are you performing? Are you being held accountable for your performance? It's not to say we do not want to pay staff, but one of the reasons why we found ourselves is the high level of downtime and poor productivity levels. So whatever support you can give to us around that will be appreciated. And then the other areas around the King Code of Governance is around performance and evaluation. Also across our board, across our strategic partners, also dealing with the Department of Defense and the SANDF, very important partner for Dinel. They really helped us during tough times at Dinel. And I think, yes, we need to increase order coverage with them, but we also need to deliver the programs that we've committed to be a reliable supplier to themselves. And then lastly, around the King Code, dealt with legitimacy. You know, our forensic investigations that we've been busy with, the effectiveness of the Auditor General, we've been very impressed with the Auditor General's role. We used to be audited by private sector firms. The Auditor General has now taken a hands-on role in auditing ourselves, and we've seen the performance. Hence, the CEO has spoken about the integrity of the previous year's numbers. Where we've been showing profits previously, we do not believe that those numbers are high integrity. And the Auditor General, no doubt, is taking a very thorough view in terms of doing it. We are also taking steps to ensure we have an effective internal control function in the organization. So a couple of points, some specific areas. Around the investigations we concluded both around VR Laser and Dinel Asia, we found them both to be unlawful. And these are investigations that the board took during a very difficult time that we came on board at Dinel without the SIU's proclamation on Dinel. So these were investigations that we funded, and we are very pleased with the SIU's proclamation that took place during July. because that will help speed up other investigations we need to do. And where we need to take both criminal and civil action, the SIU's role is most welcomed around it. We are engaging with the SIU because we believe there are some areas that should be included in their scope. So we're engaging with them to see whether we can increase the scope of the proclamation. I think that some of the issues we've made, you know, with SAMI, we've made the point there is no equity deal with SAMI. I think we've been clear to yourselves the last time we met, and just to re-emphasize that point to you. Sorry, I'm just looking at the rest of my notes. The bursary matter, we are not pursuing the beneficiaries. Here we are pursuing people within the organization that bypass all of the rules within the organization that we've set. There is a criminal investigation that's going on with SAPS, and we are cooperating with them. And our action is followed by legal counsel views that we've obtained, and we are making progress. As I did state, is that we are in the pre-trial stages around it. Other claims that we are pursuing relates to the VR Laser transaction. We feel that they were unlawful based on supply agreements that were signed in 2014 and 2015 that was against the constitutional principles of fairness and transparency. And there, the Donnell Group concluded transactions post the change in the shareholding of VR Laser since 2014 to 2015. We've concluded transactions in excess of 370 million rand. So at the moment, we're in a legal process with the VR Laser Group, where they are also claiming some monies from ourselves. We, as a board, took a decision not to make any payments to them, you know, and we are proceeding with our both civil and criminal obligations around it. I think that's just at a high level I wanted to make. There may be some other questions which we haven't covered, but we will address them.
Oh, there were some direct questions to you dealing with when do you think you'll break even, and something on Group Acer as well.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair. I want to comment firstly on the questions on Sudri. So what happened in June, because I saw there's a lot of perceptions and also communication in the media about it, so I want to set the record straight. When I arrived at the NEL in January, I was not sure how I will pay salaries 8 days later, because there was no surety about it. That's the level of uncertainty that we faced. But I'm happy to report that we have paid salaries for all months in the 8 months that I've been with the company. In June, we had a bit of a hiccup, and I want to explain that. What happens is we go to our lenders group. As I said, it's a banks, Absa, Nedbank, and RMB, and we ask them for bridging finance to pay core salaries on the back of the government guarantees that we have, Chair. And what happened in June is simply the process took too long, and one of those banks failed to secure approval from the credit committee in time. So we were 1 day late with 15% of the salaries of all staff. So that's the impact, that's the reason why. So there was a lot of speculation, interesting rumors in newspapers that SAMI gave us the money. It's simply not true. APSA is the heroes that helped us, and it's simply a process issue that failed. So that's the feedback on June salaries, Chair. Chair, you also asked a question in your part of the questions about possible further staff reduction, Section 189, and so on. Currently, we're not planning any Section 189 in terms of the business. I think we have achieved the level of capacity that we need. There are pockets in different parts of the business where we have 20, 30, and 20 people that are not utilized effectively today. But we have plans to deal with that capacity, to redeploy them, use them on a part of the other business and so on. So there will not be any Section 189 in the immediate future. That's not part of the other plan, to be clear. In terms...
Except that as you go into the various companies and subsidiaries, you might come here and say that this is what we found in Area X and this is what we are thinking. I'm hoping that the Parliament can allow you that flexibility and not hold you to the fact that right now we don't foresee such an activity, but you don't know because you are still in the middle of a restructuring.
Thank you, Chair. On the question on when the business will break even, Honourable Chair, our current corporate plan shows that we will break even in the financial year 2021. So the plan shows a small profit of around 200 million in that year. In terms of the, I think the question...
Assuming you get the additional 1 billion.
Yes, depending on the additional 1 billion. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the pipeline, as I understand the questions about the pipeline, the question is, what's the level of certainty? Is it, you know, can we do it? So I want to comment on that, the credibility of the pipeline. We have a basket of opportunities of more than 50 billion. On those, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we have specific opportunities. We have detailed capture plans for those opportunities. But we're also realistic. We understand it's subject of export regulations, of customer decisions, etc. So we take a conservative view that we will not take the full 50 billion, but we believe we can do around 30 billion. Of the 30, we already have two in the bag, as I reported in Q1. So we're making good progress against that. And then when I spoke about the largest export contract in the history of Danel, that will add another 5.5 to 6. Then we have 8 of the 30. Some of those opportunities, it's not dependent on one opportunity of 20 billion. There's a large one of 14, which is very important, which is a mega deal for us. But there are typically opportunities in the range of 3.5, 5 billion that we are well positioned for in terms of missiles, artillery solutions, and so on. We have a bit of a dependency on a certain market area, and we are in the midst of diversifying, also looking at other markets, looking at the India market, how do we get back into the India market, and so on. So we're trying to reduce our dependency on a single area or single market, but also there I'm confident that we can achieve it. So there are no guarantees that we will land the 30 billion, but I'm confident that we're doing everything in our ability to secure that and to land the opportunities that are available, and hopefully more and maybe different ones. That's the nature of business in my 25 years of business. Sometimes you don't win one, but another one comes in. And so I'm confident that we can achieve this level of order intake. Honorable Chair, in terms of supply chain, in terms of the EXCO cost, and in terms of the lessons learned, I think those are topics that we will provide some specific reports on and provide you with some details to answer those questions. Thank you very much.
I also think there were some questions about what we are doing to support other SOEs and because it's the second time that is coming through, you brought it up during the visit. We did give an example that we already are supporting on the civilian side. We are doing chemicals, for example, for Sasol, strategic chemicals. We've got a very small unit within Danel that is just chemical engineers. They are proving to us that if you can rebuild that, they can also assist in the desalination of water and all that chemicals. We are also trying to do more work with SAPS between ourselves, SA Express, the maintenance of their aircraft. Our divisions assisted on that. But I think the best thing we would do is to write you a report on where we are. And then last, while the DM is here, while the Deputy Minister is here, DPE brought a panel of ourselves and other SOEs under DPE to look at how we can synergize. One has got the following platform. How can that support the other SOE do better? What can we produce for them in a more efficient way? And I want it is too bad that parliamentarian closure is left. On the issue of subs, we take note of that and we'll go and find out whether there's still an opportunity for us to come in. But we are exploring ways to support the family of SOEs and to strengthen our capacity for the state delivery. I think we've tried to cover everything. And the Deputy Minister, there were some questions for you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think just firstly, we had the board as well as the management speaking on the matters, because rightfully the accounting authority, insofar as Danelle is concerned, is the board, and they are here together with the management. Of course, we do oversight over them. We do provide the policy parameters in which the work that gets to be done is undertaken within. That is what we endeavor to have in place each and every year, so that there is certainty as they operate during the course of the year. Of course, we have to constantly monitor adherence to that which is agreed, constant interactions monthly with the management are undertaken, as well as where it includes other departments. For instance, as we're dealing with a very constrained financial environment, Treasury is constantly involved. So in those management meetings, Treasury is present, and where specifically there are other departments that are of concern, for instance, DOD, they would also be brought into the loop, so as to constantly be engaging one another into how we could smoothen things, make things lighter. Regarding collaboration between the SOCs as well as synergies, I think the chair of the board is correct. We are looking at, for instance, if you're looking at aviation, there is capacity that DNEL has that currently is provided to the Air Force in terms of the Department of Defense. We're looking at how there could possibly be collaboration between the maintenance arm at SAA, supporting SAA, SAX, perhaps if they can't in the future be an entity that would comprise the concentration of that capacity, so that we can be able to look after our maintenance, routine maintenance and other things in respect of just the assets we have in aviation. But it's a matter that already is on the table to be looked at as to how in the future that can unfold. I think it's important at this point just to underline the fact that we are operating in a financially constrained environment. We would have heard from the President, the Minister of Finance, from time to time speak to our reality in terms of the fiscus, which has itself imposed a particular way of looking at how we conduct our affairs. Just as government departments are required to make cuts, I think you may have heard of subsequent cuts that must be made, the SOCs are not exempted from that. They too must undergo that exercise. So the imperative of looking at what you can do best at the least cost becomes something that is unavoidable, where you have then to look at other things that perhaps you can still achieve, employing other means. Those options have got to be looked at. I think it is in that view that some of the business entities have to be looked at, but of course with the long-term view to say how do we reach levels of sustainability so as to enhance the capacities that we have. I think this is one SOC where the future is indeed very much lucrative in the sense of the capabilities that over time have been developed, which are in the possession of the state as we speak. Yes, certainly because we're operating in an environment where we interface with the market in the private environment, there would be others looking at this capacity we have, either to form profitable partnerships. I think in the environment we have not closed ourselves to that possibility given the constrained environment we are operating. But of course it should be that we are not diminishing our capacity and footprint in this area, but there are areas that have got to be looked at in the fine comb. Is it necessary that we continue doing this at what levels? I mean, just not far from here, next to, I think as you go towards Somerset West, there is a very, very interesting facility there that is producing ammunition, firearms, long range, short range type of ammunition that are necessary for certain sectors. It's a partnership between a German company as well as Denel, where we own about 49% of it. This is where they say of that, just our stake in that is just about 1.5 or so billion. So you might have, I mean, there are other areas that, again, we are operating in spaces that the private sector also would take interest, whether you're talking satellite technology, setting up satellites. These are important things that if we really customize the usage for agricultural purposes, I think interface with agriculture in respect of agricultural research, looking into issues of climate change. These are things that there is scope for inter-sectoral collaboration and using the platform of SOCs to advance, to harness the capabilities and work going forward. There are questions that are specific, and I'm sure I did in another exchange refer to already some of the SOCs that have moved. I think there's been a question raised in respect of lifestyle audits. I think they are at different stages of implementation, the SOCs. I must say they have really taken some steps ahead of the departments, and I know probably if we follow this up, I know that DPSA is working on refining the framework of lifestyle audits being done within the public service as a whole, and where there is clarity on the process to be followed, even for the executive, I'm sure myself and the minister will be the first to volunteer that exercise be undertaken. We have absolutely no problem at all. I think what I take, Chair, and I think the Chair of the Board could do so, is I think SOCs have been battered, and we are battered, in the sense that we hardly even want to be out there communicating the good that is happening in that space. And I think what we could take back from the exercise, and I'm sure also for the department, is that can we place some emphasis on communication? Because the only communication that is out there is communication only in respect of the difficulties. In fact, right across SOCs, even those that are beyond the staple of DPE, there is just no communication. All the people are really fed with is perhaps the difficulties, the bad news, and all of that. Yet there is present within these very, very good prospects. Of course, having dealt with the issues of the corruption that's been endemic, having dealt with it, we would then be able to start projecting positively using the good that is taking place within these institutions. Thank you, Chair. The occasion today was for the board.
Thanks, Lord Deputy Minister. Honorable Kwankwa.
Thank you very much. I was very mindful earlier of commenting without having followed the discussion and ending up making a complete fool of myself. I think now I'm better placed to make input on this issue. Thank
Let
you.
Let me warn you that you have to live with the disadvantage of getting only 3 minutes.
I know. I speak for 3 minutes in the House, so 3 minutes is a lot of time for me. Well, Chair, I think, indeed, I think the visit to Denel last week was much appreciated. It helped to put a lot of issues into perspective, number one. But I think what needs to happen, Chair, the question about break-even, even though I was not here, I think is a pertinent question, even though it talks about the long-term strategy to say in 2021 you are going to break-even. But I think on a regular basis, when you meet with us, you must be able to tell us where you are in terms of your long-term turnaround strategy so that we can be able to track the progress. The question really for me as I'm sitting here going through the presentation is about finances, to say, after the guarantee, how has your financial situation in terms of the cash flow improved? So that we can be able to track progress. Because in the past, what happens is that guarantees are given. You don't know what's happening in the entity until things start falling apart. And there needs to be help from Parliament on a regular basis. I therefore want to make this proposal, Chairperson. I saw it in one of the committees, to say, maybe what should accompany the presentation is a brief narrative document that speaks to the critical and key issues, which would give MPs a bit of context, would compare obviously with our own internal research reports with what you've actually given to us. But Deputy Minister and government in general, I think the issue is broader. The challenge for us is broader than just that. Parliament is an institution from where we're sitting. Should build its own institutional capacity. Capacity to be able to evaluate guarantee proposals, for instance. But not only that, to be able to conduct our own risk assessment. Because if we're going to hold you to account on the guarantees that you've been given, we must have our own template that is slightly different from the Treasury one, for instance. Because the guarantee proposal, for example, the guarantee framework that was given to Eskom as an example by National Treasury, what you discover there is almost like we have to praise the fish for swimming. Most of the things that are contained in the document are things that they are supposed to do anyway to a large extent, right? So we must be able to say, how do we build enough stretch and pull within the framework that we build that will ensure that these entities indeed do what is expected of them? That's a discussion for another day, Deputy Minister. But I think from a more strategic point of view, it's an issue that we need to tackle. I look at another issue here. When you talk about the sale of non-core and loss-making assets to improve the liquidity position of the entity, for me, it means the issue here is very complex. Why? Because when a minister, the government made a policy decision on this issue to say we're going to start selling non-core assets, we're talking about SOEs but not assets within SOEs themselves. So the audit was to say we have more than 100 SOEs, some of them are not strategic, but we've never considered that within those SOEs, there are assets that are not strategic and that are non-core, right? So we haven't even started identifying the non-core ones, but now we're discovering. It's not a denial issue. It's a policy issue that government has to deal with. It's to say that within these SOEs themselves, there are many non-core, non-strategic assets that need to be sold off so that we can improve the cash flow position of these SOEs. But linked to that question, as I conclude, Chair, I don't even think my 3 minutes has expired, but you can extend it to 10 minutes if you want. Key to this issue is to say then, if you were to balance your books, had you sold these non-core assets earlier, would you have retrenched or reduced your staff complement by the number of people that you have? Could you not have tried to do that as an immediate, short-to-immediate intervention in order to try and avoid retrenchments to some extent? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other member wants to make a follow-up? Can it be just one question? Please. Honorable Kumede.
Taking from the comments that honorable members are advancing, it looks as if there is a willingness that some of the non-core items be retained. I wanted to recommend, but that will much more be dependent on Treasury, that what, if possible, can they quantify how much it will be to run those non-core items and whether Treasury will be willing to support. The question that we've always been pushing is, are you still going to come back to us and ask for more? that's where, because I think you must have basis to say, yes, we'll come back to you. I think I share the same with the Honorable Jones, that in fact we need to support. The money is money, but the decision we may take may be dependent on Treasury, whether they do have reserves available to assist us as DNL.
Yeah, it's your turn again.
Chair, the comments received from parliamentarians remain valid. I think for us as a board, what we hope we can be able to support you with is to get you more informed and very competent on DNL to make policy suggestions. The question is, how do we do that in a narrow presentation on your performance, for example? And I think we have shared with our shareholder. All I can say is to request that from now onwards we are not too far from one another and only come when there is a crisis, but that we use your close oversight to find smarter ways of keeping it like that so there are no surprises, and to find better ways to inform you. If we knew that our reports to you must always deal with the following type of issues, in human capital that, in financial performance that, then gradually we come closer to the kind of report that deals with all your key issues. That I think I want to say we're willing, now that we've got a management team, to provide you succinct, useful, appropriate information, because it's very important to us that you feel well informed and that we didn't hide things from you. But you must guide us, because some of the things DNL deals with ESSO are highly proprietary, so that there will be maybe formats under which we talk about certain things together, and that you are continually guiding us on how to best engage you. We do not want to cause you pain by hiding information. But thank you. It's been challenging. Thank you, sir.
That's the last comment from the members. We would like to thank the Deputy Minister for always availing himself. But just to say that from the committee, would also expect you, Secretary, to write when we are promised reports that we'll receive them and responses, let that happen. But to say everything that we've spoken about in one time frame, so that we just not speak from the financials, all these matters, governance and all of that. That's all, Chairperson. Thank you.
That's my duty to do that, actually. Yeah.
Deputy Minister?
No, thank you, Chair. It's really to appreciate the exchange, and particularly the revealing visit you had. Thank you very much for it. It helps, I'm sure, had Honorable Mazoina attended, she would also benefit from the experience presently than the experience of the fifth term. Thank you very much, Chair. Look forward to the other visits.
No, thanks, Deputy Minister. I don't take it light, our visit there, not because we are a newly constituted committee, but also our understanding is that one has to before you do anything, you have to understand the material conditions first. Even politically, where I'm from, I was trained first to appreciate the state of the situation before you come up with any mechanism. Therefore, if you and mechanism and the material reality changes time to time, the current the reality that we face might not be the one that was faced last year, you know, and the year before that. I know for a fact that we have a new CEO now, which is Joanyuan, and he was not there last year. And if we didn't go there, we didn't even appreciate the difference between the situation he found in there and the one that we have seen, including the committee, that the board that is there, is just newly established also. Therefore, those material realities, one has to comprehend with and understand them as they are before you provide solutions to them. Otherwise, you'll have solutions that are twisted and are not based on those realities. Therefore, I don't take our journey there very light. It's very important. I know, by the way, that we are from different political parties. We've got very different kind of an approach. But I remain positive that we are a family of public enterprise. And the owner of these public enterprises, and we've got a duty to deal with the challenges that are facing. And when we deal with those things, we have to be some kind of a collective. And a collective, therefore, has to try to find each other all the time, so that when we call people like you, we talk with the same kind of an objective, even if our objectives somewhere they differ. And they will always differ. I want to thank you for giving us that opportunity to see your company, and then also give us an opportunity to go all over that place within the space at the time we had, and you were treated well. But we want to stick to this to our principles. That's what we all agreed about. That we don't need to. People don't need to visit, otherwise you will end up a tourist destination if everybody has to visit in order to know what Dinan is doing. I'm happy that the Deputy Minister appreciates that. Also, thank you to the Department. I think you have done a lot of work. You have been, before we went to even to these entities, you first set us down. And we appreciate that experience because it also gave us a picture of where we're going to. Therefore, acting Director General, we are very, very pleased with the manner in which you assisted us. We almost met you in others. In fact, we didn't go anywhere without meeting a member of your department accompanying us. That alone shows that will cooperate and work with us as this arm of the state. We really appreciate that. Thank you so much. We'd like to release you. We'd like to release you so that we can be finalizing our business of the day. Thank you. Unfortunately, you have already helped yourself without getting a permission from us. But, you see, I wear a tie. I didn't want to. Yeah. Okay.
look at the minutes, and I think it's minutes, yeah, is the draft, adoption of the draft minutes of the previous meeting. Can Secretary take us to... I don't have it.
The minutes were basically for the 10th of July 2019, where we were adopting the budget vote report and the minutes. So the first page is the attendance of members, and then the opening remarks of the chairperson. And then the second page is basically the consideration of the budget vote report and the consideration of the and adoption of the minutes. They were very short, yeah.
Can I check if it's a true reflection of what we all know? Okay. Honorable Dami.
Thank you, Chair. I move the report.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kumele. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think Yandi has also given you the program. We have only got 2 weeks left. Did you put it? Yeah. It's part of your... yeah. Yes, we've got 2 weeks left. 2 weeks left. Eh? And then we've got, firstly, on the 10th, which is next week, Tuesday, the Committee on Appropriation will be having a meeting where they'll be deliberating on the appropriation bill for ESCOM, which is on the 10th. And then, the committee will be invited to be attending there. And then on the 11th, the committee was meant to have a meeting to look at progress that has been made in the implementation of the turnaround strategy and advancing developmental objectives of ESCOM. But since the portfolio committee on energy and minerals had wanted a joint meeting with the committee on the Friday, which the Friday was going to be on the 13th, then we persuaded them that instead of having two meetings in the week, we can ask ESCOM to have actually the electrification included in the presentation. And the Department of Energy will also be in that particular meeting. So that is the proposal that we have made for the committee's adoption. Instead of having two meetings on Wednesday and Friday, rather let's have that meeting then. And then on the 18th, we had South African Airways. Basically, is to deal with is where the committee will get progress report on turnaround strategies, because at the oversight we couldn't go into detail in terms of the finance because there wasn't enough time. So these particular meetings will be used for the committee to interact into detail with regards to the performance of the companies and how far they are in terms of their turnaround strategy. So those are the two meetings that were left for the year, for the term. I wish.
We also have forgotten that we receive a correspondence from Honorable yes, and we need to action in terms of trying to have that session with ESCO. Because I also find out that there is merit to what she indicated on the letter.
Honourable members,
I think we need to have a meeting, a similar meeting with this one, with the ESCO. Around their turnaround strategy also. Seemingly, there is a turnaround. I don't know whether we put it on the same meeting, because this one is only dealing with it's not part of this. Okay. Then if it's part of this, I'm covered. Thank you. Can we close if there is no pressing matter? Okay.
Just one question, Chair. The meeting on the 11th of September, I haven't seen the letter from the Honorable Matsoni. It's not going to be covered there. Because what you have just alluded, I think, and I was under the impression that also the turnaround strategy should be covered in that meeting.
That's what he's correcting me about.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.